File 12. The more I became acquainted with the external forms of social democracy, the greater became my desire to understand the inner nature of its doctrines. For this purpose, the official literature of the party could not help very much. In discussing economic questions, its statements were false and its proofs unsound. In treating of political aims, its attitude was insincere. Furthermore, its modern methods of chicanery and the presentation of its arguments were profoundly repugnant to me. Its flamboyant sentences, its obscure and incomprehensible phrases, pretended to contain great thoughts, but they were devoid of thought and meaningless. One would have to be a decadent bohemian in one of our modern cities in order to feel at home in that labyrinth of mental aberration, so that he might discover intimate experiences amid the stinking fumes of this literary dadaism. These writers were obviously counting on the proverbial humility of a certain section of our people, who believe that a person who is incomprehensible must be profoundly wise. In confronting the theoretical falsity and absurdity of that doctrine with the reality of its external manifestations, I gradually came to have a clear idea of the ends at which it aimed. During such moments, I had dark presentiments and feared something evil. I had before me a teaching inspired by egoism and hatred, mathematically calculated to win its victory, but the triumph of which would be a mortal blow to humanity. Meanwhile, I had discovered the relations existing between this destructive teaching and the specific character of a people who, up to that time, had been to me almost unknown. Knowledge of the Jews is the only key whereby one may understand the inner nature and therefore the real aims of social democracy. The man who has come to know this race has succeeded in removing from his eyes the veil through which he had seen the aims and meanings of his party in a false light. And then, out of the murk and fog of social phrases, rises the grimacing figure of Marxism. Today, it is hard and almost impossible for me to say when the word Jew first began to raise any particular thought in my mind. I do not remember even having heard the word at home during my father's lifetime. If this name were mentioned in a derogatory sense, I think the old gentleman would just have considered those who used it in the way as being uneducated reactionaries. In the course of his career, he had come to be more or less a cosmopolitan, with strong views on nationalism, which had its effect on me as well. In school, too, I found no reason to alter the picture of things I had formed at home. At the Realschule, I knew one Jewish boy. We were all on our guard in our relations with him, but only because his reticence and certain actions of his warned us to be discreet. Beyond that, my companions and myself formed no particular opinions in regard to him. It was not until I was 14 or 15 years old that I frequently ran up against the word Jew, partly in connection with political controversies. These references aroused a slight aversion in me, and I could not avoid an uncomfortable feeling which always came over me when I had to listen to religious disputes. But at that time, I had no other feelings about the Jewish question. There were very few Jews in Linz. In the course of centuries, the Jews who lived there had become Europeanized in external appearance, and were so much like other human beings that I even looked upon them as Germans. The reason why I did not then perceive the absurdity of such an illusion was that the only external mark which I recognized as distinguishing them from us was the practice of their strange religion. As I thought that they were persecuted on account of their faith, my aversion to hearing remarks against them grew almost into a feeling of abhorrence. I did not in the least suspect that there could be such a thing as a systematic anti-Semitism. Then I came to Vienna. Confused by the mass of impressions I received from the architectural surroundings, and depressed by my own troubles, I did not at first distinguish between the different social strata of which the population of that mammoth city was composed. Although Vienna had then about 200,000 Jews amongst its population of 2 million, I did not notice them. During the first weeks of my sojourn, my eyes and my mind were unable to cope with the onrush of new ideas and values. Not until I gradually settled down to my surroundings and the confused picture began to grow clearer did I acquire a more discriminating view of my new world. And with that, I came up against the Jewish question. I will not say that the manner in which I first became acquainted with it was particularly unpleasant for me. In the Jew, I still saw only a man who was of a different religion, and therefore, on grounds of human tolerance, I was against the idea that he should be attacked because he had a different faith. And so I considered that the tone adopted by the anti-Semitic press in Vienna was unworthy of the cultural traditions of a great people. The memory of certain events which happened in the Middle Ages came into my mind, and I felt that I should not like to see them repeated. Generally speaking, these anti-Semitic newspapers did not belong to the first rank, but I did not then understand the reason of this, and so I regarded them more as the products of jealousy and envy rather than the expression of a sincere, though wrong-headed, feeling. My own opinions were confirmed by what I considered to be the infinitely more dignified manner in which the really great press replied to those attacks, or simply ignored them, which latter seemed to me the most respectable way. I diligently read what was generally called the World Press, Neue Freie Presse, Wiener Tageblatt, etc., and I was astonished by the abundance of information they gave their readers, and the impartial way in which they presented particular problems. I appreciated their dignified tone, but sometimes the flamboyancy of the style was unconvincing, and I did not like it. But I attributed all this to the overpowering influence of the world metropolis. Since I considered Vienna at that time as such a world metropolis, I thought this constituted sufficient grounds to excuse the shortcomings of the press, but I was frequently disgusted by the grovelling way in which the Vienna press played lackey to the court. Scarcely a move took place at the Hofburg which was not presented in glorified colours to the readers. It was a foolish practice, which especially when it had to do with the wisest monarch of all times, reminded one almost of the dance which the mountain cock performs at pairing time to woo his mate, It was all empty nonsense. And I thought that such a policy was a stain on the ideal of liberal democracy. I thought that this way of currying favour at the court was unworthy of the people. And that was the first blot that fell on my appreciation of the great Vienna press. While in Vienna, I continued to follow with a vivid interest all the events that were taking place in Germany, whether connected with political or cultural questions. I had a feeling of pride and admiration when I compared the rise of the young German Empire with the decline of the Austrian state. But although the foreign policy of that empire was a source of real pleasure on the whole, the internal political happenings were not always so satisfactory. I did not approve of the campaign which at that time was being carried on against William II. I looked upon him not only as the German emperor, but above all as the creator of the German navy. The fact that the emperor was prohibited from speaking in the Reichstag made me very angry, because the prohibition came from a side which, in my eyes, had no authority to make it. For at a single sitting, those same parliamentary ganders did more cackling together than the whole dynasty of emperors, comprising even the weakest, had done in the course of centuries. It annoyed me to have to acknowledge that in a nation where any half-witted fellow could claim to himself the right to criticize and might be even let loose on the people as a legislator in the Reichstag, the bearer of the imperial crown could be the subject of a reprimand on the part of the most miserable assembly of drivellers that had ever existed.